Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. A quote by Oliver Wendell Holmes. The mind of the bigot is like the pupil of the eye. The more light you pour upon it, the more it will contract. And by historian Alan Nevins, a quote, narrow partisanship and poisonous national suspicions and animosities can defeat the will of a majority of intelligent Americans and do injury to the best interests of the nation and the world. And in that light, I start today's program with Donald Trump, a notorious draft dodger during the Vietnam War, who seems to desire being accredited and applauded as a war president, such as Abe Lincoln and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which, of course, hardly disguises his fervent, psychotic ambition to be America's, with a K, Adolf Hitler / Joseph Stalin. I start with an article in The Guardian, written by David Smith, truly a commonplace family name for The Guardian. Trump's war with Iran signals perilous shift from showman to strongman. And a subhead, you might say, the emergence of Hawk Trump dismayed some of his MAGA base, but students of U.S. adventurism were unsurprised, quote unquote. And now the article. So the military parade that brought tanks to the streets of Washington, D.C. on Donald Trump's birthday was more than just an authoritarian ego trip. It was a show of strength and statement of intent. Exactly a week later, sporting a Make America Great Again, MAGA, cap in the Situation Room, the American president ordered the biggest U.S. military intervention in decades, as more than 125 aircraft and 75 weapons, including 14 bunker-busting bombs, struck three Iranian nuclear sites. Trump called it a spectacular military success, but it remains unclear how much damage had actually been inflicted. Trump's gamble was cheered by Israel and Republican hawks. It alarmed some in his MAGA base, who fell for his rhetoric promising to be an isolationist who would end forever wars. It left egg on the face of Pakistan, which only a day earlier it said it would nominate Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. But there was no inconsistency for those paying close attention to the president's war on democracy, which since January has included a draconian crackdown on immigration, including masked government agents grabbing people off the streets and deporting them without due process, and the deployment of Marines and National Guard troops against protesters in Los Angeles. Trump's strike on Iran was another example of both his disregard for public opinion. 6 in 10 Americans opposed U.S. military involvement in the conflict between Israel and Iran, according to Economist YouGov poll released on 17 June, and his contempt for Congress. Democrats were quick to point out that his actions were a clear violation of the Constitution, which grants Congress the power to declare war on foreign countries. There was no evidence of an imminent threat to the United States that might have provided grounds for Trump to act unilaterally. Adam Schiff, a Democratic member of the bipartisan Senate National Security Working Group, noted there was no intelligence showing Iran had made the decision to build a nuclear bomb or was constructing the mechanism of a bomb. And in a breach of protocol, leading national security Democrats were not informed of the strikes until after Trump announced them on social media. But once again, Democrats find themselves shut out of power and shouting into the wind. Many called for Congress to pass a measure based on the War Powers Act that seeks to block, quote, unauthorized hostilities, unquote, in Iran. Congresswoman Summer Lee of Pennsylvania called it a necessary step to, quote, rein in this out of control wannabe dictator, unquote. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York called for Trump's impeachment. Fat chance. Republicans who control the majorities of both chambers are willing accomplices in their own subjugation. They remained mostly silent as Trump unleashed Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, parentheses, DOGE, on the federal bureaucracy, gutting USAID and other agencies under Congress's purview. In the House of Representatives, they buried their differences to pass Trump's signature one big, beautiful bill, quote, unquote. Therefore, do not expect Republicans to pull the emergency brake on a Trump train that might be hurtling towards World War III. Mike Johnson, the House Speaker, and John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, led a chorus of praise for the attack. Frequent Trump dissenters, such as Nikki Haley and Mitch McConnell, joined the commendations, taking the kind of action that would meet approval from George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, John Bolton, and John McCain. The America First wing, meanwhile, was mostly muted and subdued. Trump's cult of personality, typically Trump's differences over policy, and that is not likely to change over a military operation that took place more than 7,000 miles away with apparent success. A damaging Iranian retaliation or any suggested of a need for U.S. boots on the ground could, of course, change that narrative. After all, Trump's isolationism has always been selective. There is Dove Trump and Hawk Trump. Last year, Dove Trump falsely claimed to be the only president in 72 years to have no wars. In fact, Jimmy Carter never declared war or lost a single soldier to hostile action. In his inaugural address in January, he said, "We will measure our success not only by the battles we win, but also by the wars that we end, and perhaps most importantly, the wars we never get into." And that's a quote. Yet Hawk Trump looks familiar enough to any student of U.S. foreign adventurism. In his first term, he ordered cruise missile strikes on Syria, expanded military operations in Somalia, intensified the campaign against the Islamic State, dropped a massive ordnance air blast bomb in Afghanistan, and ordered a drone strike that killed the Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. In his second term, Trump's bombing campaign in Yemen has led to the deaths of almost as many civilians in 2 months as in the previous 23 years of U.S. attacks on Islamists and militants in the country. These contradictions are where J.D. Vance, the vice president, becomes a useful foil. He has been an outspoken isolationist, openly questioning why the United States should care about Ukraine's borders rather than its own. During the Iran crisis, he has remained staunchly supportive of Trump, standing beside the president during Saturday night's televised address and defending the intervention on Sunday's Meet the Press program on the NBC network. We're not at war with Iran. We're at war with Iran's nuclear program, Vance said, using the type of doublespeak that the Bush administration specialized in to conjure phantom weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He added in the same interview, "I certainly empathize with Americans who are exhausted after 25 years of foreign entanglements in the Middle East. I understand the concern, but the difference is that back then we had dumb presidents, and now we have a president who actually knows how to accomplish America's national security objective." And that is indeed a quote. Trump has called on Iran to agree to end this war, quote unquote, saying that, quote, "Now is the time for peace," quote unquote. It remains to be seen whether the strike will push Tehran to de-escalate the conflict or widen it further. And that was Trump's war with Iran signals perilous shift from showman to strongman by David Smith, which he wrote for the Washington Post. And now, also for the Washington Post, House Democratic veterans back moves to limit Trump's military authority. And it's written by Joseph Gideon. A group of 12 House Democratic military veterans have thrown their weight behind efforts to constrain Donald Trump's military authority, announcing they will support a War Powers Act resolution in response to the U.S. president's go-ahead for airstrikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. The veterans, some of whom served in Iraq and Afghanistan, were strongly critical of Trump's decision to launch what they called preventive airstrikes, quote unquote, without U.S. congressional approval, drawing explicit parallels to the run-up to some of America's longest recent wars. 20 years ago, in their rush to appear strong and tough, politicians from both parties failed to ask the hard questions before starting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they wrote in a letter led by Representative Pat Ryan to Trump, sent on Monday. "We refuse to make those same mistakes," quote unquote. Their intervention comes as multiple war powers resolutions are gaining momentum on Capitol Hill, with the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer pushing for a vote as early as this week to rein in the president's military actions. The veterans did not specify which measure they would support, as competing versions are being drafted by different Democratic factions alongside a bipartisan effort. The War Powers Resolution of 1973 was enacted to limit the U.S. president's ability to commit armed forces to fight abroad without congressional consent in the form of a vote. Representative Thomas Massie, a Kentucky Republican, and Ro Khanna, a California Democrat, have been championing one bipartisan resolution, while the ranking Democrats on the House Foreign Affairs, Armed Services, and Intelligence Committees are preparing an alternative, according to Punchbowl News. Democratic aides describe the latter to the outlet as providing cover for members uncomfortable with backing the Massie-Khanna approach, although lawmakers will not be discouraged from supporting both measures. The adamance against the legality of America's involvement has only intensified since Trump's Saturday night strike on three Iranian nuclear sites, and the line from centrist to progressive Democrats has been to charge the president with executive overreach. The New York representative, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, called for Trump's impeachment, describing the attack as, quote, a grave violation of the Constitution and congressional war powers, unquote. While the House Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, accused the president of misleading Americans and dramatically increasing the risk of war. For the 12 veteran House members, the issue cuts to the heart of their military oath. We all swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 explicitly requires a vote by Congress to declare war, they wrote, demanding clear answers about military objectives, estimated costs, and potential American casualties before any escalation. The signatories included Representatives Gilbert Ray Cisneros Jr., Eugene Simon Windman, Chris DeLuzio, Jimmy Panetta, and Ted Lieu. Still, their letter walked a careful line on the broader Middle East conflict, labeling Iran evil, and that's a quote, and pledging continued support for Israel while warning against the strategic limitations of military action. While destroying nuclear sites may achieve initial tactical success, it far from guarantees long-term strategic victory, they argued. The dispute has built on uncomfortable divisions within Trump's own party, most notably with conservative influencers and independent news media that lean to the right, with Massie and Senator Rand Paul emerging as Congress's most vocal Republican critics of the Iran strikes. But Trump has since escalated his rhetoric, posting on Truth Social, which is a big lie, and that's my own addition, about potential regime change in Iran and asking, making Iran great again, why wouldn't there be a regime change? Congressional leaders have also expressed frustration over the administration's failure to provide adequate consultation before the weekend operation. While Schumer received a call from Trump officials, he was reportedly not told which country would be targeted, and Jeffries, quote, could not be reached until after, unquote, the strikes had begun, according to the White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt. And that was from The Guardian by Joseph Geddon. House Democratic veterans back moves to limit trumps military authority. And now, from the Wall Street Journal, Treasury sounds death knell for the American penny, by Mike Blake. The United States government is phasing out the penny. His use has spanned more than two centuries. The Treasury Department will stop putting new pennies into circulation by early next year. Afterward, there won't be enough pennies to use in everyday cash transactions, and businesses will need to start rounding up or down to the nearest 5 cents, the Treasury said in a statement. Trump has been critical of the penny, as was President Barack Obama. Trump, in a social media post in February, asked the Treasury to halt penny production. Since then, bills to stop its production have been introduced in both chambers of Congress. The U.S. Mint, which is the Treasury's in-house coin producer, projects an annual savings of $56 million in reduced material costs. Americans will still be able to use pennies in cash transactions after production stops. As pennies fade from circulation, businesses will have to adjust pricing. Non-cash transactions will continue to be priced at exact change. The Treasury said state and local governments should provide guidance to retailers so that sales taxes are properly collected. Congress sets the rules for currency productions, including the size and composition of coins, and can discontinue or eliminate coins. But the Treasury said it has the power to halt the production of new coins. With production costs rising, the U.S. government lost more than $85 million last year on the roughly 3 billion pennies it produced. Meanwhile, Americans throw away up to $68 million in coins a year. They are left in plastic bins at airport security checkpoints and even used in art and home decor. Some 60% of actively circulating coins, or as much as $14 billion, sit in coin jars, according to the Federal Reserve. But the penny remains deeply embedded in American culture. Traders may buy and sell penny stocks. Grandparents advise that a penny saved is a penny earned. Friends are always eager to offer their 2 cents. The U.S. is following the footsteps of Canada, which stopped producing the coin in 2012 and eventually started to round cash transactions to the nearest 5 cents. Australia and New Zealand stopped producing 1 cent pieces decades ago. The U.S. penny was one of the first coins made by the Mint after its establishment in 1792. At the time, its design featured a woman with windswept hair. The penny has since shrunk in size, and its composition has changed from pure copper to a mix of zinc and copper. In 1909, Abraham Lincoln was first featured on the coin in honor of his 100th birthday, according to the Mint. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer for this program. I end today's program with a handwritten poem on the inside front cover of a used hard copy volume of Khalil Gibran's magnificent epic, The Prophet. A friend is one who never fails to answer any call. but who is always glad to serve in any way at all, who does not ask you how or when a certain thing occurred, or whether it may be yours or someone else's word. A friend is one who loves you for what you are, regardless of your humbleness or likeness to a star, who does not count the faults you have or tells you what to do, but is quick to recognize the better side of you. A friend is one who always wants your life to be a song and tries to lend a helping hand when anything goes wrong.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.